Hello, and welcome to I Am Dad Podcast with your fatherhood authority, Kenneth Braswell. 30 minutes of wisdom, information, resources, and nuggets to help you on your fatherhood journey. Or maybe you're just curious and want to hear some real talk about fatherhood, family, and the minds of men. Well, guess what? We got you too. Sit back, grab your pad and pen, and maybe even bring a little something to sip on. Enjoy 30 straight minutes of fatherhood, family, and fun with the fatherhood authority, Kenneth Braswell.
Hello, and thank you to I Am Dad Podcast, where I'm your host, Kenneth Braswell. And we are having such a great time in doing this podcast. It just gets better and better every week. My guest just keeps elevating and raising the bar for me in terms of conversation. And this thing is actually morphing into something that is different from what I thought it was going to be in the beginning. I thought that I was just going to be able to have some authentic conversations and really just kind of chop it up without hitting people with a lot of research and statistics and sad stories. But it has become this component of education where we're actually educating people and people are hearing things that they've never heard before. And then the more important thing that people are hearing is they're beginning, particularly dads, are beginning to understand that they're not out there alone, that there are people out here that are working on their behalf and trying to advocate for them so that they can be the best dads that they desire to be and be in the lives of their children. So I'm very excited about that. And so today, my very good friend, Dr. Latrice Rollins, she is doing some incredible work, not only locally in Metro Atlanta, but nationally as well. Let me introduce her to you in a little bit of bio. So Dr. Latrice Rollins is an assistant professor at Morehouse School of Medicine in the Department of Community Health and Preventive Medicine and Prevention Research Center. That's a mouthful. She is also the director of the National African American Child and Family Research Center. Dr. Rollins is a Robert Wood Foundation culture and health leader whose work is focused on father engagement and father inclusive practices in health and human services. And she has a lot of other things going on, including being the editor of the book, Engaging and Working with African-American Fathers, Strategies and Lessons Learned. Dr. Rollins, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me here.
No, I've been wanting to, you know, I've been clamoring at trying to figure out how do we lock arms and really dig into this work. And I think that both of us have just been like building at the foundation. That's the best way I can put it. It's like when you're building at the foundation, it's kind of hard to see the rest of the world. It's kind of hard to engage when you're trying to build something that you can actually build on that becomes solid for you to have a platform to do the work that you're doing. And I don't think a lot of people think about the foundation work. And so if you could tell people about yourself, about your work that I just did not describe in your bio.
Yes. So I've been working on father engagement. So not so much, you know, looking at fathers as what can we do to make them better fathers? No, where can we help fathers? Where are fathers needing resources or needing services and not being seen? So my work is really on the systems side, on the services side, with practitioners, those that have that ability to provide the resources and services. And mm-hmm. So we've been just so fortunate to embark on this community mobilization approach that was kind of coined by the National Fatherhood Initiative. And we kind of changed it a bit. You know, usually they focus on father absence a lot. And so we kind of flipped it and looked at how can we support fathers' engagement, you know, mm-hmm. recognizing and starting from a point of fathers are engaged, fathers are here. So how do we support them when they show up to schools, when they show up to practices with their kids, when they show up to the health appointments, doctor appointments, how can we support them? And it's not something that I do on my own or the fatherhood programs like yours do on their own, but we need everybody involved. We need the churches involved. We need, of course, health and human services, but we need the schools. We need a number of different folks, media, entertainment. Everybody has a role to play in supporting father involvement, because at the end of the day, it's all about supporting families. You know, at the end of the day, it's about supporting our communities. Mm-hmm. The stronger they are, the stronger our communities are. So, so just working to bring leaders together, see what we can do in these number of different areas to support our fathers and families. Besides that, then there is the research, which I like to just take a different spin on things. I use father engagement like Red's hot sauce, that Frank's hot sauce. I just put it on everything because fathers, positive outcomes are associated with father involvement in so many different areas, you know, whether it's education, whether right now I'm working in maternal and child health. So a lot of these spaces, people don't even think about fathers for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the name maternal and child health, I get it. But in order for mom to be pregnant, it had to be a father somewhere.
Right. So, y'all got along at least once, right?
It got along once. So where is he? How can we make sure that your whole, you know, support system is being assessed and you're getting the services and the resources that you need? So in all of these different research studies, just continuing to add to the literature about the role of fathers and, you know, how important it is for us to engage them.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things with my staff and many people that I work with and around, and this is something that I don't know about you, but I'm getting ready to ask the question. I just find it comforting that I'm always intrigued with people who are deeply engaged in this work of responsible fatherhood. Each and every last one of them has a story of why this work is important to them. But I'm more intrigued when I see women with strong passion and desire to really dig into this work of responsible fatherhood. I don't know your story. Tell me why this work is so important to you.
Yeah, and I think it's a multitude of things, personal and professional. You know, having worked in the Georgia Child Support Services Office as my first job out of Spelman College, I just thought I was going to change the world. Let me help families and things like that. And I saw that things were different. Fathers were treated differently than mothers. And I worked in the office that dealt with TANF cases, so temporary assistance for needy families. You know, if they received TANF, then it automatically started a child support case. And so I just found it interesting that, you know, a lot of resources were given to the mothers, but these fathers were typically in the same situation as the moms, but there weren't really any programs or anything for them to make sure that they were also getting jobs and being able to, you know, take care of their children, take care of themselves. And so that kind of sparked me to just work with the different resources and services. They had the Georgia Fatherhood Program at that time. And that just lit a fire, you know, under me, just seeing the lack of awareness that people had about the different needs for fathers to have services and things. I am a daddy's girl. and I know the importance it is to have a father in your life. My father did not stay in the house with me. So I always get mad at that whole statistic that, you know, 70% of African-American households are female-headed and they're fathers. No, that just means he ain't living in a house with her, you know. So, but my dad was, you know, he never lived at home with me, but we are closer than ever, you know, and so always engaged. So I knew that I have grandfathers, uncles, cousins who, you know, are not perfect, but they're great. You know, they're fathers and they care for their children. They care for me, you know, and so it's like, I just wanted to make sure that there's equity for the most part, you know, like if we're going to say that we're doing things in the best interest of children, or we're doing things for the families, it has to be inclusive, you know, of fathers as well, or whatever male caregivers that they have who are supporting them. So, you know, just continue. I think just because it is an uphill kind of battle in getting people to really prioritize father engagement and to recognize the importance of it. I think that just fuels me even more and makes me even more passionate, okay. You know, to do something about it. Because I think if it just was people just got it and it wasn't a big deal, you know, I could just go on and researching a number of different things, but it just seems like so much needs to be done in this space. Mm-hmm. I can't let it go. So
yeah, we have a lot to catch up with, and there's two tracks I want to go down because you said two things that just like triggered me, and I was like, oh, I want to talk about this. Well, many of my guests are going to be repeat guests. And so I know there's absolutely no way that Dr. Rollins and I are going to be able to talk about everything we need to talk about in 30 minutes, which means I'm gonna have to bring her back like 100 times so we can get everything out. But you said two things that triggered me, but I'm gonna choose one. The first thing you said was when you talked about working in child support, and I also worked in child support. So I got to bring you back just to talk about that perspective and what it looks like. I stop short of saying this, but I want to be real to all the folks that are listening, the belly of the beast. I want to be able to kind of talk about how our minds were framed by being in the middle of child support and how folks saw the community that they claim to serve or want to serve and the tactics to which they go about doing that. But there's this other thing that you just said when you talked about being a daddy's girl and you talked about him not being at home, because it's something that has triggered me over the last few weeks or so. My daughter and I, my youngest daughter, who is my game changer, she's a daddy's girl. Like I know what it's like.
And yes, so,
but I'm from the other side. I want to talk to you about it. Being a dad, who's a girl dad, right? I have one son, and I love my son to death, and I have other daughters. But there's something about the love we have for our daughters, right, and how that fuels us to be who we are and what we're doing. But there's this element of it that I've been talking about lately that I want to talk about very quickly as it relates to non-resident. And you said something real key, which is I hate when people jack up that piece of research by misquoting it. You'll hear a lot of people say, well, 72% of Black children grow up without a daddy. That's not what the stat says, right?
That's not it.
It's not what the stat says. Well, 72% of them grow up in female-only households. That's not what the stat says. It's not what the stat says. And always debunking these myths that people put out there around this whole notion of non-resident meaning non-existent, right? That's the connection. Whenever people say non-resident, they make people believe that absent. They actually mean absent, not there. Mm-hmm. When there are degrees of absence, which is why I also frowned against and don't ever use the word fatherless. There's no such thing as a fatherless child. 100% of all biological children have a biological father. The question is not if he exists, it's where he exists. He could be deployed, he could be deceased, he could be incarcerated, he could be on the other side of town, the other side of state, the other side of the country, the other side of the world. But the question is never if he exists. The question is where he exists, which actually demands people to ask more questions. When you think about the non-resident element of this, particularly as it relates to research, are we missing the boat because we're not really focusing on ensuring that the folks that we're trying to convince that fathers are essential in the lives of their children understand this notion of non-resident absence and all those things that are associated with people using research to claim that we're not there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of times, even in proposing my own studies, I'm going to talk to 100 fathers. I get the question, well, how are you going to get them? Well, what do you mean? I mean, I'm going to ask, you know, I'm going to work with my community-based organizations who work with fathers, and we're going to just ask them. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, then they give the statistic, you know, most fathers are not involved. And I'm like, that's not true. You know, so a lot of times, you know, the questions, the assumptions are made, and therefore the research doesn't get done, you know, because they assume that, well, I'm not going to be able to engage this population, or I'm not going to be able to recruit this population if they're not living in the house, you know, or they're not showing up to the particular program. Well, then they're just not around, and they're not able to be, you know, their perspectives, their stories, their data is not able to be included because I'm just not going to be able. And it just is about, you know, you have to build those relationships. You have to build those partnerships with folks, and you have to change your mentality. You know, you have to change your mindset to really say, this is important. You know, I need to capture this. I need to capture their perspectives and not think about the traditional, you know, two-parent home where everybody's living in a house. That's just kind of rare now. Even if you do have two parents staying in a home, it may be a stepfather, you know, it may be a blended family. There's families just come in a number of different, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Arrangements. And so we can't limit our thinking to, it has to look, you know, this certain way. And I can only get at this population if they're, you know, readily just, no, it's going to take some work. And so a lot of times, you know, our fathers are excluded from a lot of these research studies and things because, you know, researchers or, you know, the partners or funders in my case are thinking, this isn't doable. You know, this isn't feasible. This isn't a feasible study. And we, you know, folks like us, we just have to keep on showing them.
Yeah, because the proof is out there, right? It's out there. It's in our own lives. It's around us. We see it, you know.
Yes.
We just did this documentary with the Clearinghouse called Dadication. And one of the things I said was, you know, people keep talking about how dads are, or they can't find dads. And I'm like, where are you looking? Right.
What are you saying? What are you asking?
Because everywhere I look, I see them. They everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere I look. And they're engaged on very different levels. You know, when it comes to, you know, one of the big questions, which is why I think it's important that people hear your voice in this space, and I hear it all the time, and people, you know, wherever we go to a conference and we're doing a presentation, and particularly around facilitation or case management, or even in some other level of responsible fatherhood work, the question always arises, can women do this work, right? Talk to me a little bit about that. When someone says that to you, are you as effective as a man is in that space? Like, how do you respond to that? And what should people know about women in this work?
Yes. And that was actually my doctoral dissertation, to talk with African-American women who were doing work with African-American fathers in particular. And I wanted to learn, you know, what were some of the strategies, what were some of the challenges that they had just in establishing a helping relationship, not just because of being different gender, but also being different social economic status, also, you know, being of the same race, and kind of what that may bring up, you know, for, you know, a Black man and a Black woman, you know, how does that kind of work? Does it work to your advantage, or, you know, does it not? And so I went into that work, really, I give credit to Dr. Jeffrey Johnson. He's the one that I met with and said, what can I do? I'm so passionate about fatherhood. I know that we need more evidence about the fatherhood programs, but what can I do to contribute? And he said, how about looking at women in fatherhood? He was like, you know, talk with them, see, you know, what kind of research can be done in that space. And so I did. I went to here in Atlanta, of course, interview women here, interview women in my hometown of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, talk with women in Baltimore and D.C. and New Orleans and Lafayette, Louisiana, just a number of different Black women who were engaging and as passionate as I am about making sure that fathers had access to resources. And so they were effective in what they did. And a lot of them also partnered with male co-facilitators to just, you know, make sure, one, there was a good deal of modeling that was happening, because it was like, you know, you're getting to see a man and a woman working together, and it's platonic. You know, it's not any sexual relationship. This is a healthy working relationship. But you get to hear a woman's perspective on some of the things that they're talking about. They may be going through with the mother, and you also get to hear a male perspective. And so that was key. A lot of them worked in partnership with a male facilitator or, you know, male staff around. And some of them were like, look, I go out and do this on my own. And because of their passion, you know, like, look, I get it done, you know, and they know I care, and that's effective, you know. So it just kind of depends. And so is there a cut and dry, you know, men are more successful than women and such? I think it all has to do with the person. It has to do with their facilitation style, has to do with their ability to establish that rapport, their ability to navigate the environment and different resources. Because yes, you have your fatherhood program, your parenting curriculum, but let me let you know, they're not coming just for that, you know, and they're not coming just to hear about that. There's some other things that they're coming to the table with, and you're going to have to address, you know, those other things before they can even hear, you know, what you're talking about. So I've had a number of different experiences. I've heard some women say some terrible things about fathers, and I've heard some men say some terrible things about fathers, you know, that they're working with. And so it really deals with the individual and their passion as opposed to their gender.
Yeah, I always find my answer in Ephesians 3, I believe it is, to that question. And it basically, the scripture basically talks about there's a season for everything. There's a season for this. There's a season for that. There's a season for this. There's a season for that. I think
Ecclesiastes, yeah,
right? There's a season for women to be in the midst and sharing their opinion with fathers. There's a season for them not to be. There's a season for dads to be here. There's a season not to be. There's a season for us to be in this space. There's a season not for. We just have to be smart and articulate enough to understand when we are beneficial to the situation and when we're not. And when we bring something to the table that's adversarial as opposed to unifying in the table. That's the thing that we have to figure out. To your point, it is absolutely not about gender. Some of my greatest insights and biggest influencers in my life have been women, right?
Yeah.
Mostly been women, because I didn't spend a lot of time around men, more men now than ever. Like, I'm just super surrounded by men now. Wish I was super surrounded by them when I was younger. But there was a season, right? There was a season for me not to be surrounded by them, and now there's a season for me to be surrounded by them. Mm-hmm. And so I really do believe that, you know, I always dismiss that conversation and said, listen, time and need. Right. There's a time and is there a need. When the need is there, the time will show up, be available for the opportunity to be there. But don't, to your point, don't try to put a cookie cutter around when you're supposed to do something, when you're not supposed to do something. If you have to ask yourself the question, should I be there? You probably shouldn't be there.
Right. And I think it just limits us, you know, particularly with health and human services being very female dominated. You know, if we just say, well, we can't serve fathers because we don't have any men here. I mean, that is just, you know, a disgrace, you know. So we have to, as women, we have to be comfortable with engaging fathers, engaging male caregivers in whatever services it is, because we might not have a male staff, you know, that'll be able to make that connection if you think that's what's required. You know, so that's a lot of the work that I do, is working with, you know, other women and saying, this is important. You know, you all have to look at this and figure out ways that you can engage fathers in these services. Do you think about them? Do you ask, you know, when you're working with mom, do you even ask any questions? Are you required to ask any questions about dad? And a lot of them, sometimes it's fear. You know, they're afraid to even open up that can of worms. They kind of assume it may be a bad relationship or something. They don't want to open up that can of worms. Or just, you know, if he does come, then that's another person whose needs I have to figure out, you know, and I don't know how to do that. So We definitely need to do work in that space with making folks feel, particularly female staff, feel comfortable working with fathers if they don't. You know, some just got it and it does, they don't need that. But right. some folks do need that convincing of like, you know, seeing their bias, seeing, you know, all of that stuff so that they can make sure, again, that we're being equitable in the services that we're providing.
Mm-hmm. The next question I wanted to ask you, but I'm going to skip it, but I'm going to throw it out there because I want you to know that we need to come back and talk about this specifically. And that is whether or not you have to be of the same race or the same culture to work with dads you're working with. And so that's a whole nother conversation, right? Around whether or not you have to be black to work with black dads. You have to be white to work with white dads. You have to be Latino to work with Latino dads. Then can you be a black woman working with Latino dads? Do you have to be a white man working with it's crazy because every time or most times I present this work, the biggest questions I get from people are questions around whether or not I can do the work or not.
Yes.
Right? They're always throwing something in there to see what your response is going to be. The biggest one always is, well, what if they are of the LGBT community? Can you work with
them? Yes, that always comes up.
Yeah, right? And I'm like, you know, and I've sat, thought about it long and hard, did all the research, and I always know my answer. Absolutely. It doesn't, right. You know, our thing is we don't identify anyone as a father. What we what we say is if you come to Fathers Incorporated, we're going to assume that you identify yourself as a father. I don't care if you are a Cocker Spaniel coming in the door, you know, somewhere in there. If you think you're a dad, hey, but understand the perspective through which you're going to learn about fatherhood is through a masculine lens. And so you'll have to discern what fits for you and what doesn't fit for you. But 95% of the principles that I'm going to give you is going to work with anyone who has the capability and desire to be a dad. The other stuff you got to work out on your own. I can't work that stuff out for you. And people are like, oh, I never thought about that. Yeah, it really is that simple. Like, you want to go in places. What you're trying to do is to me to answer the question so you can discredit who I am and the work that I'm doing, right?
Exactly. Oh, well, that's not important. You know, we have a lot of LGBTQ families, and so if you're not working with them, then
like,
what?
Right.
Yeah, they can come, whoever. Yeah.
It
yes.
doesn't matter. I mean, we have one of our biggest advocates in our program here in Atlanta is identified in that space. And she is like, listen, she goes, she said, when I came in, I asked the questions and they gave me the right answers and I took the curriculum and I'm a better person for it. And she goes, and not one time in their program that I feel like I wasn't supposed to be there. I was like, that's what we was trying to do. That's what we're trying to. And, you know, and I don't have to parade her across the media to as an example of the work that we're doing. I understand that we did it. We know how to do it. We understand how to do it. Quickly, you are now the director of the National African American Child and Family Research Center. Tell me a little bit about that work and how that intersects with responsible fatherhood.
Absolutely. It's so important. So this is an opportunity to look at how we can better serve African American children and families, and they're specifically looking in the areas of economic mobility, early childhood education, and childcare. They are specifically wanting us to look at their Head Start and Early Head Start programs, the TANF program, and the Child Care Assistance program. And, you know, this is just phenomenal to be able to have this opportunity. It's really like full circle for me as I went back to get my doctorate and all of that so that I could work for the Administration for Children and Families and to improve those different programs and services because of what I saw, you know, working for child support. So I was like, I gotta get to the top of this thing and figure out what we're doing. Wow. So this is a wonderful, you know, kind of full circle opportunity specifically, you know, it's just odd, you know, working at Morehouse School of Medicine that is so public health and very health focus and physical health and mental health focus, and to really look at a program that's addressing the social determinants of health. So those things that also impact our well-being, poverty and education and economic status, education, these are the different things that also impact our health. And so to have this opportunity to look at these programs and to insert my special interest around father engagement is really key, because I think for them, for the Administration for Children and Families, if we're not talking about healthy marriage and responsible fatherhood programs, then why are we talking about father?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about family,
and, right? And yeah, and I'm like, because it's the African-American Child and Family Research Center, and we're talking about economics, we're talking about early childhood education, we're talking about childcare. These are all domains where there are fathers and there are positive outcomes when fathers are involved. So we're not just going to leave them out. So anytime we're looking at these different programs, and right now we're just in a foundation stage where we're just trying to hear from the community, like, what is it that you would like to see improve with these programs? What is it that you prioritize, you know, in terms of your well-being and family well-being? And we want to make sure we hear from dads too, you know, not just, just women. And so that is a lovely 5-year grant and opportunity for us to contribute in this space. And hopefully, as I said, to kind of be transformative and expand their perspective on what we mean when we say family. It's not just moms and children. It is whatever that family looks like. If it's granddaddy, if it's grandma, if it's dad, if it's uncle, as a people, we're tribal, we are village, you know, so it's not just going to be who is right in the house. It may be, you know, a whole collection of what we consider family. So, so we're happy to be able to contribute to the definitions, the measurements, and just being that voice, and also making sure that this is a community-based and community-engaged research agenda. It's not just what Dr. Rollins thinks is, you know, needs to be researched and needs to be put out there. No, we're talking to the community. We have community who are on our staff, you know, community members who have lived experiences with these programs, who are part of our research staff, who are saying, yep, you know, that's the right question to ask. Yep, this survey looks good. Nope, that's too long. That's too much. So we're excited and just, you know, looking, like I said, to do some transformation.
Yeah, we wanted to, you know, we launched a year, maybe it's been a little over a year now ago, the Moynihan Institute for Fatherhood Research and Policy. And at the core of why, you know, I launched that was because of my longstanding issue. David Miller and I don't know if you know David Miller. If you don't, you should know him. Oh, yeah. So, okay. So he, you know, David is, you're talking about an inspirer. That brother is an inspirer, particularly as it relates to our folks in our communities, right? And we was talking one time and I shared this African proverb with him. And he was like, you got to do something with that. And it's the African proverb that says, as long as the hunter is writing the story, the narrative will never be told.
That's right.
And I was talking to him about my frustration about, you know, because me and David went to Africa 4 years in a row before the pandemic hit. And so that had a heavy influence on how I think about particularly Black folks in America, and more specifically Black fathers. And I was talking to him about my frustration with what society sees or the industry sees in the credible research voices that research our people, analyze our people, extract data from our people, compose narrative of our people, and then distribute those narratives. And Black firms, Black institutions, and Black people don't take on that work to write our own narrative, which is why I appreciate so much what you're doing and is why I started the Moynihan Institute. And people say, well, why did you name it Moynihan? And they start talking about Moynihan. And I said, the Moynihan Institute is not about the man. It's about the report itself. That's the lightning rod. And I said, if I would have called it, name any prominent Black researcher in America, whatever his or her name would be, you would not take me serious. Right. Mm-hmm. So I had to do something and call it something that would raise your eyebrow and pay attention to what I was saying. 25 years from now, when we're embedded and deep in the narrative of talking about Black folks, we'll change the name then, you know, to the Dr. Mincy research, you know, or the somebody. But right now, you're not going to take me serious if I call it the Charles Ballard Institute for Research. Because first of all, your first question was, who was he and what made him relevant? Right. And so when I hear about the work that you're doing specifically on that family side, it intrigues me. And, you know, I said this to you, I don't get a chance to say this to you a lot because we're both, in fact, your name was in the mix when we were talking about pulling in the fellows. And I said, Dr. Rollins is busy. She got things. She ain't going to be able to focus on the Moynihan Institute. She's building her own kingdom on the other side. We just have to be complementary communities. And I've never even thrown it out to you. I just made the assumption that you would not be interested. And I think that a working relationship between the two of us can be more beneficial, but the invitation to be a part is always open to you. So wherever you find, and I, you know, we already have some people who are cross-pollinating. Dr. Sandra Bolar, who is working with you, is awesome. In her space and the stuff that she does. And Azariah, who I love. Dearly, I'm gonna be honest with you, you stole her from me because I always had my eye on her. But when I see the complement of people that you are building in your space, I'm like, yeah, this is it right here. Like, let's just keep pulling these Black scholars into our space. And what I'm looking for now is these young scholars, these hungry boys and girls that are looking to get into the space and want to do this work, and having them get out there and use their expertise and their voices to kind of go at these millennial thinkers and these Gen X thinkers and really go out there and really stir up some stuff out there. So when I'm ready to like step aside, I know it's left in great hands. So intentional about building our institutions, which is why I'm so happy that you're at Morehouse School of Medicine, because that's one of our most prominent institutions in this country. Right. Mm-hmm. And so our institutions, the Morehouses, the Spelsmans, the Clarks, the Howards, and all of the other HBCUs should be commanding our narrative with respect to how research is done as it relates to Black family in this nation. So thank you so much for everything you're doing. Like I said, I'm here. And so all you have to do is ask. We're gonna knock this wall down together.
Yes, sir.
Any last thoughts before I ask you to tell everybody how to get in touch with you and where to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm just so grateful for this opportunity to share, and, you know, not knowing exactly where the conversation will go. But if you get me started about engagement, we're going to talk, and there'll be more to talk about. So thank you so much for this opportunity. I can be reached pretty easily, you know, Latrice Rollins, if you search that up, either on Facebook or you search it up on LinkedIn. You can find me, get in touch with me, Latrice Rollins. I also have a website. You can get in touch there. I'm pretty easy to find and pretty always open as a social worker, always open to collaborate. So just reach out to me. Happy to talk and see what we can do. See what noise and disruption we can make.
Yeah, you answer that question. Like, I'm like, Google me. You don't know? You better ask somebody. Just Google my name. You'll find me.
Yeah, you'll find me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much. And like I said, you'll be back. And any conversations or anything we need to dig in deeper to kind of put it out there in the space. And I also did see the research thing that you have out there that you're moving. I need to grab that and make sure that we get that in the middle of our social media cycle and getting it out there to our folks as well, so I can make sure that you get who you need to make sure that those things occur. Because you know, the first thing they say, look at the cohort. The number of people that they had was really small. They really don't have a representative sample of people that, you know, I'm like, give me the number that you need. And then I'm like, we're going to try to double that.
That's right.
So you ain't got nothing to say on the other end. You ain't got nothing to say.
Nothing to discredit.
All right. So thank you so much for joining I Am Dad podcast. I'm your host, Kenneth Braswell. Thank you to all of my listeners for listening 1 week again. As the old saints would say, or the old pastors would say, we will see you on next Sunday at 8 a.m. right here, same time, same place. You guys take care. Have a blessed week.
Thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us. You've been listening to I Am Dad podcast. We hope that you have been informed, encouraged you to think, or even inspired your heart for the love of dads. The conversation does not end here. Come back and join us next week. Same time, same place. Or you can continue the dialogue on our I Am Dad Facebook page. We also invite you to listen to past episodes, learn more about us, and keep up with special activities by visiting IamDadPodcast.com. That's IamDadPodcast.com. Until next time, I leave you with this reminder of manhood from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Because of this reminder, I will always understand that I am dad, period.